plus 6. Lookout tower, outpost, New Kerguelen. Billy, pushing himself to his feet after an even harder fall than Dan's, shook his head in utter disbelief. Simply being able to move, it was a relief, but after several minutes of thinking he might never see Earth again, he felt more relieved than at any point in his life. That had been a lot worse than the Turkish jail cell, for sure. But as Dan and Leisha stood waiting at the base of the central lookout tower, in the very spot where they had first teleported into the room, Billy turned to Sacco. The alien's back was turned as he moved towards the box of cables and other communications devices, apparently keen to take some back to the great shelter for research purposes or simply to use. "I need to know two things," Billy said to Sacco, either bravely or recklessly joining him by the box. "Billy," Dan said very firmly, "quit while we're ahead." Billy stood firm. "You two can go if you're worried about him getting angry again. Seriously, Dan, go. Thank you for what you said about them letting me go, but now I'm saying the same and meaning it just as much. Go home to Piper and tell Timo I'll be back when I'm back." "What are you even talking about?" Dan asked. "How hard did you hit your head?" Billy upturned his palms. "I didn't get this close to a lookout tower on an alien planet and not climb it to see the view, okay? That's not how my life story is going to read. That transcript mentions cities. You heard it. So what's out there is one of the things I need to know." "And the other?" Sacco replied, indifferent and impatient all at once. "What happens next?" Billy replied. "Because my life story doesn't end on a cliffhanger either. Are you going to keep what we found in here quiet and let the rest of your kind keep thinking of the machines as elders who stopped responding? And you're not really going to close the gate you use as a shortcut to Earth, are you? Just because the architects put it there, which I guess we're assuming they did, that doesn't mean you can't use it for good. We don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater." Dan watched on, trying to think of a term for what Billy was doing and ultimately settling on the opposite of quitting while we're ahead. He couldn't pretend he wasn't also curious, though, and he was standing safely next to Leisha with the adjustable uplift headset safely in his hand. Given that Billy really had meant what he said about staying behind, if that was what it took to learn the full truth, Dan thought Leisha wouldn't hesitate to teleport the pair of them back to the great shelter and the waiting spacecraft if Billy talked himself into any further trouble with Sacco. "We will discuss with our planetary council what to tell the general population and how to tell it," Sacco said. "I'm sure Dan will engage in a similar process on Earth, balancing truth with responsibility." Dan nodded. He too fully expected to be involved in exactly those kinds of discussions. He wasn't even sure how much he would share with Godfrey and Ding about Sacco's use of force, but he would absolutely be telling them everything about the architects. A comment made on Focus 2020 on the topic of cutting off contact with dangerously powerful aliens, made by Joe Crabb of all people, came straight to Dan's mind. Pretending he didn't know about the existence of a seemingly all-powerful third race, let alone one who were prepared to use devious deceit to get what they wanted and who viewed humans with extreme suspicion, while perhaps easier than confronting reality, really would be the equivalent of humanity closing its collective eyes and hoping it made everyone invisible. "What was the very last thing the machines said before you stopped getting responses?" Dan asked, so caught up in the thoughts now that he found himself joining Billy's questioning. He didn't leave Leisha's side, however, not quite caught up enough to lose sight of the fact that he was safer next to his dependable alien friend than anywhere else. Clark already owed Leisha his life, and after today, the whole family would owe him a great debt of gratitude for stepping in when he did to talk Sacco around.
"It was very unclear," Sacco said. "The elders worked. Excuse me, the machines worked by displaying transcripts. Towards the end, we began to see repeats. We always asked questions via a palm-based cable to transfer our thought to the machines, and towards the end, as I said, we started to see answers to old questions, irrelevant questions. We would ask about the shelter's repair and see something about agriculture, and then we might see the same thing for every question we asked over the next few days.
We thought something was wrong with our elders, as we knew them at the time. But now, perhaps it makes more sense to consider that something was wrong with the architects. I hope so. These final three words, more understandable than vindictive, earned a full-hearted nod from Leisha. So, Billy said, agriculture, huh? Chalk that up as another thing on this planet we know nothing about. What do you guys eat?
Plants, Sacco said.
Ones I would recognize as plants?
You would recognize our grains as grains, the alien replied. Some of the other foods, perhaps not so much.
How long do you live? Billy asked, seeing no need for a segue as he moved on to a new chain of questions. And do you breed and reproduce like normal, you know, people, animals, whatever? They're going to feel like they're on Focus 2020 if you keep up these questions, Dan laughed. Sacco almost smiled, getting the reference, given how much attention he and Leisha had paid to Earth during the previous year in particular.
Only slightly longer than you do, and yes.
Thanks, Billy said, but the one thing I still really don't get is this. What was the deal with that whole thing last year when you thought the shelter was degrading? Did they tell you that? Because why would they?
It was complicated, Sacco admitted. We had instruments which provided atmospheric readings inside the shelter, and in certain areas they relayed very worrying data. But it turns out they were wrong. They began to give those bizarre readings right at the time when the machines began to display the wrong transcripts. It was like some kind of system failure.
Maybe the architects all died, Billy said. Maybe their home star imploded without warning and they all boiled, brains first. Charming, Dan chuckled.
Is that everything?
Sacco asked Billy, a rare question of his own. Almost, Billy lied. I still want you to tell me that you're not really going to close the gate between Earth and New Kerguelen. Do you even know how to do that, or was it a bluff? Or wait, did you even threaten that, or was it only Dan who brought it up?
We will not be closing the gate at this point, Sacco replied, a good politician's answer that left no doubt he wouldn't expand on it any further.
Then we should study it together, Billy said, persisting unflinchingly in his don't quit while we're ahead tactic. Sacco, for his part, didn't seem nearly so impatient as he had when Billy's barrage of questions began.
Perhaps we should study your discoveries of the architect's apparent visit to Earth together, Sacco replied.
Billy's eyes lit up like a cartoon dog stumbling upon the world's biggest pie cooling on the world's lowest windowsill. He turned to Dan.
Surely?
I'll make the case, Dan said.
Billy extended his hand for Sacco to shake. Even for Billy, this was bold, but he held Sacco's eyes and didn't lower his hand even after 10 uncomfortably slow passing seconds.
Together, he reiterated. Sacco, no stranger to handshakes after so much human observation and the occasional participatory landing, eventually accepted Billy's gesture. Billy grimaced slightly at the feeling of the oddly shaped hand. Those thick, finger-like divisions were a lot more noticeable on his skin than via his eyes, but sucked it up as part of the experience. He was shaking hands with an alien being on an alien world to mark their agreement to study the visitation and portal technology of a third alien race. Not even 10-year-old Billy Kendrick would have considered this a plausible dream, and around 50 years later, it was still almost too much to get his head around.
Okay, Leisha said from Dan's side. It's time.
I think there was some talk about going up the tower to the lookout, Billy said, inflecting it into a question and speaking as though he hadn't been the sole originator of such talk.
We have to discuss how to handle the broader situation with our planetary council, Leisha said. We can't be seen to make unilateral decisions.
But we won't be here then, Billy said, apparently channeling his inner 10-year-old for the tone. Leisha and Sacco shared a brief glance before Sacco put down the cables he had been holding and Leisha turned to Dan to deliver one of his best ever exaggerated winks. Two disorienting flashes and two split seconds later, Dan and Billy found themselves at the top of the lookout tower. alone. While Dan was looking around the square platform and then down the laddered entrance for any sign of the messengers, Billy let out a gasp that went on and on and on and on, right until Dan reached his side and took over with an awestruck gasp of his own. A city lay before them, untouched for untold centuries, but still utterly incredible in both scale and style. New Birchwood, Billy said. Right? We can't call it anything else. Dan smiled at that for a few seconds, before his default expression of shock, the only appropriate one in the face of a discovery like this, quickly returned. The city didn't look futuristic in any familiar sense, lacking the sci-fi hallmarks of a silver and blue palette or glass composing almost every building. Instead, it was difficult to tell where some buildings began and others ended. There were no parallel streets and no blocks. Instead, the overall effect was of concentric circles with a large green space in the center and rings of built-up areas that grew increasingly thick as they got further from the center. One day I'll be back, and one day I'll be down there, Billy said, mainly to himself. With God as my witness, one day I'll be back. I'm sure you will, Dan said, meaning it 100%. Billy patted him on the back. And for all we know, Dan, there might be 100 of these cities here, and this might be the smallest one. Dan didn't see any sense in dulling Billy's spirit with his own viewpoint that it probably was the biggest one, since it was, after all, directly adjacent to the spot where the architects had chosen to build their observation outpost. Considering this point raised the question in Dan's mind of whether the architects had visually observed the native population before trapping them in a web of lies, while quite literally trapping them in the great shelter. In turn, this made him wonder about the early days of the shelter. It would make one hell of a story, he thought, trying to think of some way it might ever become known. Short of New Kerguelen throwing up a Dortlu Tepe-like site, the lack of intergenerational knowledge caused by the architects' installed caste system and their dissuasion of free thought made it impossible for any illuminating myths to have been passed down. Dan imagined the architects building the great shelter and offering it as refuge against some coming disaster, and tried to imagine the fear and helplessness of the natives. Or would it have been worse? He wondered, thinking that the planet's inhabitants might have been endlessly grateful for the shelter that would enable their effective enslavement for millennia to follow. I keep thinking something about this whole thing, Billy said. Don't you think it's almost like, I don't know, a kind of post-colonial thing? A beautiful planet ruled terribly by outsiders who put systems in place to stop the natives from advancing too much and led through fear? I'm not saying it's a perfect metaphor, but it is one. Mid thought, as he prepared to answer what was a fairly deep and insightful question from Billy, Dan experienced a one-flash, two-flash combo that, while far from getting old, didn't quite get his heart going as it once had. Back on solid ground, Dan looked at Leisha first. Do you want to know what we saw?
I'll know when I see for myself. Leisha smiled.
Billy, meanwhile, was already back to badgering Sacco. How in the blue hell have you never seen the city or this outpost when you fly overhead?
Because we don't fly overhead, Sacco responded, like this should have been obvious. We enter and exit New Kerguelen's atmosphere via the gate, which is above our great shelter.
And then teleport in? The endlessly curious archaeologist asked.
No. We enter the landing site in a conventional manner. Come on, I'll explain when we're there.
Are you coming to Earth too? Dan asked.
Not today, Sacco replied,
getting ready to flash the whole group of four back to the great shelter.
But I'll see you off.